WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Those for and against Virginia's redistricting amendment have made their closing arguments, and today is the last day to vote. On Virginia's budget, Senate Democrats are at odds with their House counterparts and with the Democrat in the governor's mansion. And a Charlottesville pastor talks about how her faith informs her views on climate change. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, April 21st. The entire town of Stannardsville is under a boil water advisory. The Daily Progress reports a private contractor broke a water line Monday afternoon in the nearby Green Industrial Park. A break in a water line can lead to a drop in water pressure, which can expose a water supply to harmful bacteria, including E. coli. And if consumed, E. coli can cause severe stomach cramps, diarrhea, and vomiting. All residents and businesses in Stannardsville, west of the industrial park off US 33, and just east of the park on Fairlane Drive, are being asked to boil tap water before consumption. Campaigners for and against Virginia's proposed redistricting amendment have made their closing arguments. Today is the last day to vote. Jad Khalil with partner station VPM News reports.
In the last days of the campaign, elected officials have increasingly warned their supporters about the other party controlling Congress. On Saturday, Governor Abigail Spanberger spoke to door knockers in Henrico County about the behavior of the Republican-controlled Congress.
Gas prices are going up, families are getting hurt, and every day it's a new assault on our very system of government.
On Monday, GOP Representative John McGuire of the 5th District spoke about the vote at a diner in Henrico's West End.
Do you like high taxes?
No.
Do you like taxes?
No.
So what are you going to do on Tuesday?
Vote no.
About 1.4 million people have already voted. Polls are open until 7 p.m.
Jad Khalil reporting. Senator Mark Warner and his wife, Lisa Collis, announced the death of their 36-year-old daughter, Madison, on Monday. The couple said she passed away after a decades-long battle with juvenile diabetes and other health issues. In a statement, Warner and Collis said that Madison, quote, filled our lives with love and laughter, and her absence leaves an immeasurable void. Senate Democrats are at odds with House Democrats and with the Democrat in the executive mansion over the budget, and they are not likely to resolve their differences anytime soon. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
Ask former Governor Glenn Youngkin what happens when you find yourself on the wrong side of Senator Louise Lucas, chairwoman of the powerful Senate Finance Committee. She took his proposal for a sports arena in Alexandria and pounded it into dust. Now she's standing firm against an effort by House Democrats and Governor Abigail Spanberger to keep a $1 billion tax break for data centers. Here's Senator Lucas speaking to reporters a few weeks ago.
You all know my position is, I'm very, very firm on it, is that they just paid their fair share of taxes.
The last time Virginia failed to have a budget by the beginning of the fiscal year on July 1st was when Republicans had the trifecta, and Republican Governor Jim Gilmore clashed with Senate Republicans over the car tax. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, Gilmore says he should have publicly taken on Senate Republicans.
And now I can look back and say that was a mistake. I should have taken the Republican senators on and fought them publicly. That's what my advice would be to Governor Spanberger. If she's passive on this, if she does not fight Senator Lucas on the merits of the issue, then she will be a loser.
Members of the General Assembly are scheduled to gavel into a special session Thursday to consider a solution to the budget impasse. Although so far, it looks like there's no solution in sight. I'm Michael Pope.
After years of trying, Democrats in Virginia's legislature passed bills that will create two new state benefit programs, paid family leave and paid sick leave. But as Brad Kuttner, also with Radio IQ, found out, the program isn't free.
I'm feeling great. I mean, It's my third time.
That's Arlington Senator Barbara Favola celebrating after getting only minor tweaks from the governor on her legislation to create a new paid sick leave program in Virginia. That and a new paid family medical leave program will arguably be the newest state benefits in Virginia since the expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act in 2019. That means, after their respective start dates, full and part-time Virginians, subject to some eligibility requirements, will get 5 paid sick days and up to 12 weeks paid family leave. The programs act like state-run insurance benefits, with paid family leave collecting about 0.5% split between employee and employer every paycheck. That's $9 every 2 weeks if you're making $72,000 a year. Paid sick accrues over time, with 1 hour off every 30 hours worked, maxing out at 40 hours a year. Derek Max with the Conservative Jefferson Forum said both benefits are too broad and amount to taxes.
It doesn't just cover medical leave, it covers military leave, it covers violence abuse. It covers not just your spouse and your kids and your grandkids, which is also unusual, but it counts anybody that you consider like family for you to care for.
But Fairfax Senator Jennifer Boyce, who authored the paid family medical leave bill, noted 13 other states have similar programs and they're popular with the public.
I think as a pro-business, it is a pro-family, it is a pro-human value.
They might not be as popular with businesses, though. A recent survey of Richmond local businesses found 21% said it would increase costs or administrative burden. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Governor Abigail Spanberger vetoed a bill to legalize electronic betting machines known as skill games. Dean Mirshahi with partner station VPM News reports that the move hampers efforts to fund the Democrats' agenda.
If you've been to a gas station or a convenience store in Virginia, you've likely seen a skill game machine. They're technically illegal, and Governor Spanberger just axed a bill to legalize them. She said Virginia needs a single independent agency to regulate all legal gambling before it expands to allow skill games. Right now, different agencies oversee different industries. Last week in a committee hearing, State Senator Craig Deeds, a Charlottesville Democrat, voiced concerns about cutting out a new revenue source with Finance Secretary Mark Sickles.
You've taken skill games off the table. What's on the table?
Right now, the administration is working with the revenues that we have.
Supporters of the bill likely don't have the votes to override Spanberger's veto when lawmakers reconvene on Wednesday.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Reverend Karen Mann is a pastor with Sojourners United Church of Christ in Charlottesville. With a background in farming, Mann's work as a pastor has also included a focus on climate change. WMRA's Calvin Pinn asked Mann how her faith informs her views on climate change.
Believe that we are called by God to be caretakers of this world. I'm not a literalist when I read the Bible, so when I read those creation stories, I'm not reading a literal 7 days or anything like that. But I am reading that God created a world that is beautiful and diverse and life-giving and life-sustaining, and that we are part of that creation. And that in that creation, we are given responsibility to care for and preserve that world. There's two words in there where God directs the first humans to keep and till the earth is what we often translate it in English. Mm-hmm. In Hebrew, it is we are to avad and shamar the earth, which might also mean to protect and preserve. And I find that to be a really beautiful way to think about what our role is. It's not to have dominion over or to destroy or to use at our will and exploit, but that we are to preserve and protect the earth. So I think that's really fundamental to what we were created to be and to do in this world, is to preserve and protect and care for this earth. For me, that's an expression of my faith, living out my calling.
It's like the idea of stewardship. That's kind of how I'm hearing
stewardship
that.
Stewardship would be another word. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this something that you have incorporated into your sermons, and how do you do that?
Climate change is something that we talk about from time to time in my congregation. My congregation is totally on board with talking about that. Last year, I believe, we did a whole series on faith and climate change. We spent, I think, 6 weeks talking about it, working through various texts that help us think about our role in caring for creation. And my congregation was really open and receptive to that. Other than that time where we spent that focused 6 weeks talking about it, it regularly makes its way into my preaching. I mean, the Bible is such an agricultural text that there are ways to incorporate it all the time. And because a lot of the Hebrew Testament talks about relationship to the land, it's also an important theme that runs throughout a lot of those texts.
Do people in your life, I mean, say, church members, family, friends, et cetera, have they expressed anxiety over climate change to you? And what do you tell them when they do?
Yeah, I mean, climate despair is a big problem. I certainly feel it myself. Last year, I did a lifelong learning course through Duke Divinity School that was around climate change and preaching. During the course, we spent a long time talking about how to hold the despair that we feel about the rate of climate change and the inevitability of climate change and all of that kind of thing, alongside some hope that is grounded in reality, that climate change is real, the changes to our planet are real, things are going to get worse. You know, we can hold those realities, right? Yeah. And also say, and there is hope for changes to happen in the midst of that, hope that people can come to understand the dangers and work to make changes, that hope and despair don't have to be opposites, that they can sit alongside one another, because we're complex beings who hold complex feelings about things. And that's what I try to hold with my congregation when I preach about it. It's like, yeah, this is scary and this is hard and we are going to have to make hard choices, and that we can also hold hope that God is with us in the midst of that, and that humanity doesn't have the last word on these kinds of things, that God is working in ways in the world that we might not understand, and that there is a measure of hope left for us.
Pastor Mann, thank you for taking the time today, and I hope we keep in touch.
Sounds great.
You can listen to a longer version of this conversation at WMRA.org or on our app. Finally today, many of us listen to music to help when we're in a certain mood. And playing music can also have a powerful emotional impact. Some therapists are trained to use music in therapeutic settings. As Radio IQ's Roxy Todd reports, last year, Virginia began a new program to license this profession.
Inside a music classroom at Radford University, Milo Wilson is playing "Someday My Prince Will Come" on the piano. He started his undergraduate at a different college, studying jazz music.
I was using music as a coping skill. I've been a highly emotional, up and down child and person, but I hadn't really thought forward as to what I wanted to do besides self-soothe with my music.
Then he heard about music therapy. He knew music had helped him many times over the years. Using his talents for something that could help others seemed like a perfect fit.
It's cheap. It's non-invasive. It's effective, it's very personalizable, and it can be inserted into institutions and situations that are notoriously very dark and difficult. Hospitals, prison systems, hospice care, these are all places where music therapy can kind of come in and shine a light.
He transferred to Radford University, one of the few schools in Virginia that offers an accredited music therapy major. He graduated with a bachelor's degree and now works as a music therapist at two nearby hospitals and is also working on his master's degree. Music therapists are trained professionals who use music to help treat people with a range of different issues, whether they're recovering from a stroke, a child with autism, or someone at the end of their life. To be a client, you don't need to be a musician, explains Wilson's professor, Rachel Rodert.
You really just need to have a love and appreciation for music, which I think most humans do.
Rodert was a practicing music therapist for 17 years and says doctors have long recognized the therapeutic benefits of music.
World War I and II is when hospital musicians really started to work with veterans returning from war.
Last fall, Virginia began formally licensing qualified music therapists through the state's Board of Social Work, a step which may help legitimize the profession. Wilson says he hopes this eventually leads insurance companies to pay for it.
All of these things that we're looking for now, like we're looking for ways to give people tools to like have healing practices that are not necessarily dependent upon a pharmaceutical prescription.
Radford music students meet together weekly for club meetings where they talk about different types of interventions that can help clients. At a recent meeting, junior Kaylin Wilson leads the group of students in a drum circle. She guides them to add clapping and body percussion to the drumming. Next, she encourages them to use their voice. One student begins singing lyrics to a rap song, and the rest join in. Throughout their studies, students work with clients out in the community and at a clinic here on campus.
It's definitely not something just to take away from the other therapies and modalities, but truly is complementary to those things.
Senior Ashley Glover says her time working at an assisted living facility showed her the power music can have for people. Often, she uses improvisation to make up songs or change lyrics to a song, adapting the music to a client's own story.
If they have a picture on the wall, for instance, maybe singing about the person that's in the picture, even if a client can't verbally respond and articulate, wow, like I like this music, just being able to still sing to them because they're still there, they're still a person.
Glover is graduating this May, and then she'll go on to work as an intern at a hospice care center. Then she can apply through the National Board for Certification, and if she passes that, she can apply for the new state license. In Radford, I'm Roxy Todd.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Monday.